The following Women's Spaces show was recorded on Monday, May 19th, 2025.
The woman in your life will do what she must do to comfort you and calm you down and let you rest now. The woman in your life, she can rest so easily. She does everything you do.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Women's Spaces. My name is Elaine B. Holtz, and I'm your host. With me at the board is my friend, my partner, my engineer, and co-producer, Ken Norton. Good morning, Ken.
Good morning, Elaine.
What a beautiful, beautiful day it is here in Sonoma County. A little bit windy, you know, which always makes us very nervous. You know, and my heart goes out to all the people in Kentucky and the surrounding states. They had that horrible, horrible tornado. Several people died. You know, it's interesting when you hear all these bad news about the weather and you think that our government is destroying all the records and trying to get rid of the environmental departments. That's just really, it's kind of silly. I have a very special guest with me this morning. Joining me on the phone is Starhawk. Starhawk is an author, an activist, a permaculture designer and teacher, and a prominent voice in modern earth-based spirituality and ecofeminism. She is the author or co-author of 13 books, including The Spiral Dance, which Ken and I have done several times with her, A Rebirth of the Ancient Religion of the Great Goddess, and and she also wrote the novel The Fifth Sacred Thing and its sequel City of Refuge. Amazing, amazing woman. I'm really, really proud to have her on. With all that's inspiring, I thought it would be a really good idea to talk about with her about her 13 principles for a welcoming movement. And I've read it. It's very, very interesting. It's an amazing piece. And I want to do a shout out to the Peace and Justice Center of Sonoma County for printing the information in their March and April newsletter. I encourage you to check out their website, www.pjcsoco.org. This organization is a great source for information. And also, I want to do a shout out to Robin Latham. She has just become their new president, and I just the activism that's coming out of the Peace and Justice Center is just amazing. Well, I have a few announcements to make, and my first announcement is I want to say happy birthday to my special, special sister-in-law, Joanne Elena. She lives up in Grass Valley. Happy birthday, Joanne. I hope that you had a wonderful, wonderful day. She's just a marvelous, a very, very creative woman. In fact, the most amazing thing about Joanne was the last gift she gave me was a little basket that she weaved. And I just treasure it beyond anything I can say. So happy birthday, Joanne. I wish you a sweet year and many, many sweet years. Also, I have an announcement that certain things are coming up. I want you to mark your calendar for June 14, 2025. That's going to be the Juneteenth celebration, a celebration of diversity and inclusion. You know, we believe in diversity and inclusion. It's going to be happening. This year is going to be a little different. We're going to be celebrating at the Courtyard Square, at 69 Courtyard Square in Santa Rosa. The event's going to happen from 10 o'clock in the morning till 6 o'clock in the morning. And to begin the celebration is really exciting. I love this part about it. You can join the march from Juilliard Park in downtown Santa Rosa, and they'll be marching to Courtyard Square. And it's so exciting when the festival starts, you know, the Juneteenth celebration starts, and you see all these people coming in from walking and celebrating this wonderful day of freedom. And, you know, we're going to have some really, really special, special entertainment. A band by the name of Top Shelf. They're a San Francisco band. They're a dance band, actually, and they are just amazing. And we are really excited that they're going to be there. Also, you know, as we do every year, we're going to have lots of entertainment, food, basketball game, arts and crafts, dominoes, kids activities, spoken word, and a lot more. So if you have any questions, you can go on to to the Juneteenth celebration on Facebook, or you can call Nancy Rogers, who's our president, and her telephone number is 707-623-2701. I hope most people remember this, but, you know, as I've been doing several interviews about the Freedom Festival with a woman by the very, very excited about this. This is going to be their third year that they're doing it. It's called the Freedom Festival, and it starts on Juneteenth, and it ends on July 4th, which I thought was very, very interesting. And I'll have more and more information as we get closer to it. But I also want you to mark your calendars Thursday, June 9th at 7 o'clock, and then Friday, June 20th at 7 o'clock at the New Vinci's Church at 3300 Sonoma Avenue in Santa Rosa. They're going to be doing a wonderful, wonderful Juneteenth, a stage reading of a new play by a woman by the name of Endred Pickett. So I really encourage people, like everything that we announce, I have on my website, which is www.womenspaces.com. So there's no reason that people need to be bored, if you know what I mean, because, hey, it's amazing. There's so much going on now. And also, I understand, I believe it is it June 14th, Ken, that they're going to be doing a major. They're going to be doing also be doing a major march across the globe. Is it going to?
Yes, it's No Kings Day march on Flag Day.
What's it called?
No Kings.
No Kings Day. I like that. No Kings Day. You know, that brings up a real heavy thought in my mind. You know, the reason the United States was formed was to free ourselves from a king and free ourselves from religious domination. I mean, and here we are going backwards. What, we want a king? I mean, it's time to start rethinking what we're doing. Well, like we do every Monday morning, we do the segment on Our History is Our Strength. Why do I do that? Because it's so important, particularly for women, to recognize whose shoulders they're standing on. And so many women before us took so many risks so we could have freedom to have a voice. You know, when you look at how many women are involved now in politics, in the Congress, in the Senate, you know, on the radio, on television, I mean, CEOs of major corporations, all this happened because of the women that the soldiers that we're standing on, the ones that stood up and spoke out and says, we want equal rights, we want to be able to vote, all the things that happened. And we need to appreciate that. You know, I think that we take things, too many things for granted. You know, freedom is like, I think of it like when you ever look at a boat when it's just docked, how the water kind of goes back and forth with it. That's the way freedom is, back and forth, you know, constantly. You have to constantly be aware of what's going on. You have to constantly make sure that freedoms are not taken away from you because, folks, once they're gone, it's very difficult to get back. And we're seeing that now with Roe versus Wade. I mean, all the debate that's going on, it's yet nothing has happened. You know, I often wonder why in the heck they didn't just leave it alone. Anyway, let's go ahead with Our History is Our Strength. And today is the 19th. So on May 19th, happy birthday, 1921, she made her transition. In 2014, Yuri Kochimara, she was a civil rights and political activist influenced by Japanese Americans' family internment and her association with Malcolm X, who we just heard in the prior show with Democracy Now! That was celebrating his 100th birthday. She advocated for many causes, including black separatism, the anti-war movement, the Maoist revolution, and all kinds of things when it looks at what happened to the Japanese Americans when they were in those internment plants, camps, and that there was some restitution that they were trying to get for them. And I don't know if she succeeded. I'm going to have to look that up. But happy birthday to her. And it was a great event that she did. What she brought forward for her people really took quite an effort. And then on May 19th, 1930, and she made her transition on, 1965, and that was Lorraine Hansberry. She was the first African-American to write a Broadway play, A Raisin in the Sun. That play was so interesting to me because I really got to see for the first time, I got to experience what it was like to struggle to be a black man in our country. It was really amazing. Well, on May 18th, this was in 1970. This is just an event that happened. And I remember this as if it was yesterday. Tina Fey, television writer, producer, and actor. She was the first woman head writer for Saturday Night Live in 1999. And she was also the creator of the television series 30 Rock and the youngest winner of the Mark Twain Prize for American Humor in 2010. So that's Tina Fey. And she was hysterical. She really was. She really was. And then the last person I want to acknowledge, and this happened in May 21st, 1973. And what I love about the things that happened in the 70s, because that's when the second wave of the women's movement happened. And women were really coming forward. And on May 21st, 1973, Leon Nikasenko, a swimmer, received the first athletic scholarship awarded to a woman, and that was she was given to her by the University of Miami. But it's very interesting, you know, when you think about it, you know, now women are graduating everywhere you turn around, but at one time we couldn't get in, we couldn't get scholarships, we couldn't get into some of these major schools. So the fact that for her swimming that she got a scholarship, an athletic scholarship to go to the University of Miami, that is an amazing feat. And she's still alive. So congratulations, Lynn. You put women on the map, and that's what's so amazing about all these different women. Well, we're going to take a musical break. How's about that, Ken? And we're going to play one of my favorite songs, and it's by Kate Wolfe. And, oh, I just loved Kate Wolfe. I was such a fan of hers. I remember when we all used to, when I first moved up here in 1973, I think it was around 1974, there was a pizza place in Sebastopol, in Sebastopol that we all used to go, and Kate Wolfe would play, and she was at that time, her partner was Down Toppin, and oh my God, he played the mandolin to die for. So I want to play this song, She Rises Like a Dolphin, and sung by Kate Wolfe. It's just, this song kind of reminds us of the way the women and rising and falling and coming forward and taking to go back, and before you know it, you finally transcend. I just love this song and believe it talks a lot about resilience. That's why, and I think that's where we're at now. We're in a place of resilience where we're stepping up and stepping out and saying enough is enough, and we the people are finally getting their voice together again. When we return, joining me on the phone, we'll be talking with Starhawk. Starhawk is an author, an activist, a permaculture designer, and a teacher, and a prominent voice in earth-based spirituality and ecofeminism. And I'll tell you something, this is one woman that I really admire. So anyway, let's go ahead and play that song, and then we'll get Starhawk on the phone, Ken.
Rises like the dolphin with the sea wind in her eyes. Sunlight casting shadows like a painter's palette knife. Her hair fans out around her, floating like a crown. She plays on the water, lets it pull her down. Sometimes she swims in moonlight with the stars high above. Night sounds of the water speaking soft of love. Her skin turns to velvet as she feels the waters glide. She loses all her boundaries on this magic carpet. See ripples on the water, watch the shadows dance. Then she's diving down, and you're looking through a glass. Like a one-way mirror, her reflection's far below. Where she was, she isn't now. That's all you really know. Two swimmers in the water, one of silver, one of gold. One below the surface, one reaching for a hole. One floating freely, one trying not to drown. A dreamer with two faces, a dolphin and a clown. Waterfall, you're thinking like a fool. She'll strike for the horizon like a ship out to sea, leaving just illusions that look like memories. She wears the water like a mask, a brand new suit of clothes, a player on the stage, an actress no one knows. See her roll and tumble, falling like a clown. A swimmer in the water that runs from higher ground.
Wow, that was Kate Wolf. I just love her. It's just a song about resilience. It's very, very, very interesting. You know, I feel that's where we're at right now, trying to gain back what we're losing, and it just feels like we're in a struggle. It really does. Well, for you just joining us, I want to remind my listeners the opinions expressed here are not necessarily the opinions of the station, its board of directors, its members, or Women's Spaces. Well, welcome back. You're listening to Women's Spaces, and I'm your host, Elaine B. Holt. And we try to get, Star Hotic, if you're listening to the show right now, we tried to dial you in. And I know I told you I was going to call her at 11:20, so that might be what's going on. You know, Star Hawk is an author, an activist, a permaculture designer and teacher, and a prominent voice in the modern earth-based spirituality and ecofeminism. She is the author or co-author of 13 books, including The Spiral Dance, A Rebirth of the Ancient Religion of the Great Goddess, and the novel The Fifth Sacred Thing, and its sequel, The City of Refuge. Her most recent book was The Empowerment Manual, a guide for collective groups on group dynamics, power, conflict, and communication. Starhawk founded Earth Activist Training, teaching permaculture design grounded in spirituality. And with a focus on activism, she travels internationally lecturing teachers on earth-based spirituality, the tools, and the rituals of activism. She holds a BA in Fine Arts in UCLA from 1973. Are you sure about that, Ken? 1973. As a graduate student in film at UCLA, Starhawk won the prestigious Samuel Golden Creative Writing Award. She received an MA. Wait a minute. I have my cell phone in my purse, the cell phone in my purse. She won the prestigious Samuel Golden Creative Writing Award. She received an MA in psychology with a concentration in feminist therapy from Antioch University West in 1982. And for today's show, we'll be talking about the article she submitted to the SoCo Peace Press, 13 Principles for Welcoming Movement. Well, right now, we are having a hard time getting her on the phone. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to read a poem. And, you know, this is really an amazing song. As soon as we get Starhawk on, we'll be able to do the interview. But this is the song is called Light a Candle. You know, if I really believe that if each one of us light a candle for peace, that I think it might just bring into the atmosphere or to help us change our consciousness. You know, I think it's really, really important. And, you know, there's a poem that I wrote, and, you know, it kind of gives us a feeling of what it's like for people to come together and join together and be one together. And the poem is called In Awe. And Ken and I walk every single day, and there's a woman by the name of Marie. We stop by her house all the time. She has beautiful, beautiful flowers. And so all of a sudden, as I was walking, I thought to myself, there's a different feeling. I thought, what is it? What was this feeling? Is it God? Is it Jesus? Is it my higher power or the mystery? I feel so solid, so alive. I feel so solid, so knowing. I feel so fearless in faith as I walked with Ken. It is a daily ritual we both love, just Ken, Rosie, our dog, and I. A miracle that we are all together. I see Maria, my neighbor. She puts out imitation flowers for every holiday. Red ones for Valentine's Day, white ones for Christmas, pink ones and yellow ones for Mother's Day. We stop, we talk for a while. She lets me know she likes my hair. She wanted to know who did it. I tell her to where I go and the cost. Maria does not speak English. I do not speak Spanish. But we have found a way together. We laugh together. We talk with one another. We share languages with one another. We teach one another. We both love our husbands and our dogs. We are different because of our cultures, but the same because we are women. We know. We say goodbye and continue walking. I feel the feeling again. I feel so solid, so unafraid, aware of the green in the trees, the cracks on the sidewalk, the beautiful rose garden. I am in awe of the great landscape, in awe of the great mystery of it all, in awe. It's just amazing. Well, I just love this. Oh, I just love it. So we just found out that we have Starhawk on the phone, and I'm really excited about that. I hope you enjoyed that little poem that I just wrote. But, you know, it's so important. I think that, you know, poetry is important. All the different things that we have as far as being able to come together, and it's just amazing. Is Starhawk on the phone now?
Yes.
Hello, Starhawk. Are you here with me?
I am.
I don't know. We had a little bit of glitch trying to get you on the phone, but here we are, and I'm really excited to have you on the phone. And we're going to talk this morning about this program that you have. It's the 13 principles for a welcoming movement. But before we start, you know, I'd like to tell. I just gave a little introduction about you. I had a little bio on you that I let all my listeners know about. But why don't you talk a little bit before we talk about the 13 ways to be welcoming? Talk about how you got involved with all the work that you do. Well, who inspired you, and where did you get the confidence? I remember when I first went to the Spiral Dance and danced out with you. It was such a phenomenal thing that was happening. Where did you get the confidence, and who were your heroes?
Oh, wow. You know, I got involved in this when I was very young, when I was in my first year in college. I took an anthropology course, and we started doing a project on witches. And eventually we decided to form a coven. We had really no idea what we were doing. but we went ahead and did it anyway. I have no real idea where we got the confidence to do it, but we did, and eventually we met some people who started training and teaching us, and it was, you know, quite an illumination for me to hear people talk about a religion that said nature is sacred, that had a goddess. You know, I was raised Jewish. God was never supposed to be corporeal in any way, but always was referred to as he, and was kind of thought of as male. And there certainly weren't, at that point, any women rabbis or religious leaders in Judaism. So to me, that was tremendously empowering. And then a few years later, I got involved in the feminist movement in the early 70s. And it always seemed to me that religion and how we perceived these deeper questions of meaning in the world and how they were shaped had a big influence on how power was distributed. You know, I think Mary Daly said, when God is male, the male is God. I began practicing. I moved up to the Bay Area in the mid-70s and found other like-minded people. And we began creating our own approach to goddess spirituality. You know, we drew roots from paganism and Wicca, and also from feminism and organizing and activism, and created a tradition we call reclaiming. A kind of combined a connection to nature and spirit, a commitment to taking action in the world, because if you believe the earth is sacred and you believe every human being is an embodiment of that sacredness, you can't just sit around and let bad people destroy things. So you have to be involved.
Let me ask you a question here. You know, I know for myself, when I moved up to Sonoma County and got involved in women's studies, I graduated Sonoma State and I went to study women's studies there. I never realized how oppressed I was. You know, it's kind of interesting, you know, all of a sudden to start finding out all these different things and finding out the lack of history that we had as far as women go and all the different aspects of it. And I remember when I went the first time I met you and we did the spiral dance, and I thought, wow, this woman is leading this dance and talking about spirituality in a way that I never heard a woman speak like that before. So, and I never forgot that. It was just amazing. So I just want to compliment you. I mean, you brought me into another level, especially with that dance. That dance was amazing. It was like a moment of consciousness that I never experienced before.
Oh.
So.
Yeah. My mother used to complain all the time about how oppressed she felt in Judaism and how her brothers got bar mitzvah and she never did. And... you know, my real response to that was like, oh, Mom, like, get over it. That was a long time ago.
Well, it's interesting. It's interesting, you know, especially, you know, when you're talking about the Judaism part, you know, I would go to the synagogues with my grandmother, we would sit upstairs, and she always had to wear a bush over her head. And I asked her, I says, Grandma, why can't we sit downstairs? She says, no, quiet. We're a woman. Just be quiet, you know. And I thought, wow. And then when I got to Sonoma State, I realized what she was talking about. So that, I think we share a little bit of that background, especially with our mothers. You know, my mother was a dynamite, but she was also oppressed and tried to overcome it and end up being overweight all her life because she was stuffing so many horrible things that were going on. But anyway, I don't want to divert ourselves from this wonderful conversation on the 13 Principles for a Welcoming Movement. You know, I what happened is I was reading the Peace Press, and all of a sudden I came across this, and I start reading it, and I says, oh, my goodness, We need this. We need to talk about this. We need to, because so many new people are coming in, and you know some of the struggles that happens when groups come together. So talk about that. Why do you believe that these 13 principles are the for a welcoming moment? Why do you believe this is important to put this information out there and to start, say, quote, training people on it?
You know, I've been thinking a lot. I've been an activist for more than 50 years. And right now, it's such a terrible time. You look back on it and you go, kind of, what has all of that meant? We're in a worse situation than I've ever seen in my life. And why do these awful people on the extreme right have so much attraction for groups and for people? What is that all about? And I started to think about how we have some core needs as human beings. You know, we need to feel safe. We need to feel like we belong to something bigger than ourselves. We need to feel like people see us and value us. We need a sense of agency, of how we have impact on the world. And we need to feel like the world has meaning and purpose, and that we have a meaning and purpose. And it began to seem to me that the right wing did a better job of meeting those needs, albeit in horrible and often destructive ways, whereas the left was not meeting those needs. I often say that the right wing makes people feel good about their worst impulses, and the left makes people feel bad about their best impulses. You know, we're never like quite good enough or correct enough or right enough, and that the movement was not in a good place. We were not speaking to people, we were not welcoming people in. We were more interested in perfecting our language or our ideology and then condemning and judging people who didn't already adapt what we had come to believe. So I've been writing a book as an experiment. I've been doing it chapter by chapter on Substack. And one of the opening chapters is called 13 Principles for a Welcoming Movement.
What do you mean by welcoming?
I mean a movement that is interested in bringing people in, not in defining who's in and who's out and kicking people out. A movement that's interested in growing and becoming broad-based and in speaking to people who aren't already part of it, and a movement that's capable of building the power that we need to actually make the world more fair and just and ecologically balanced and potentially survivable for the next generation.
Well, you know, it's real interesting because as I was reading all that was written, I come across this thing about, you said, the article is very timely, by the way, and it's so well written. It's so easy to understand. I really appreciate that. But, you know, one of the things you talk about is, as what you're saying right now, is to have a big positive vision. You know, what do you mean by that? I mean, do you feel that people, they don't have a big vision, or maybe they come in and somebody else has the vision and they don't wait to see if maybe this is what your vision is and maybe we have to work on maybe more collective to bring more people in? Is that what you're talking about a big positive vision?
Well, I think in some ways we have lost the sense that we have the capacity to make this world a better place, that we can heal the environment, regenerate ecosystems, create a world that's founded on justice and connection and compassion. And I think often young people right now the world looks very bleak, and I don't blame them. It is very bleak, and we have masses of social media and other media telling people, oh, cruelty is, you know, cool, and climate change is just a hoax. And I think it's really challenging if you're young right now. But I don't believe that that's actually true. You know, I spend a lot of my time teaching permaculture design, which is a whole system of ecological design that teaches us how we can take land and regenerate it and bring it back to health. And I know that it's possible. There's so many incredible examples of how people have done that, and done that in ways that are often very simple and don't require, you know, mass technology, but simply require some understanding of how nature actually works and the willingness to work with nature.
Well, you know, it's interesting. I think that's one of the problems that we have, that we forget, number one, that we're living on a planet right in the middle of nowhere, that we don't fall off. What a miracle. And that all this greenery around us, all this stuff around us, that we can grow our food and all these other things that happen, we lose sight if that's where we are. And mm-hmm. Do you think that is another one of the issues here? And then talk a little bit about that, is that how, when people understand more about permaculture, to how that might lead to them thinking more about peace.
Well, I think we're very lucky in Sonoma County in that we're surrounded by nature and have so many opportunities to connect with nature. And I always tell people, if you want a spiritual practice, just make it spending a little bit of time each day out in nature, watching, listening, observing, noticing what's happening in the natural world. That might be in a beautiful park or a forest, or it might be just looking at what's growing out of the cracks in the parking lot pavement. oftentimes you look at what's growing out of the cracks and it's all kinds of healing herbs, because they're the ones that can handle those rough environments.
Well, you know, it's really funny, because when Ken and I got together, you know, he was the one that really got me into gardening. And one of the most mystical things happened. We grew carrots this one year, and it just was a disaster. They were the funniest looking carrots you ever saw. And the next year we said, oh, we're not going to plant carrots anymore. But the next year, all of a sudden, way across the garden on the other side by the fence, all of a sudden there's the carrots growing. So, uh-huh. So I thought to myself, I says, wait a minute. Does a carrot have a consciousness that it knew that that was not the right dirt they had to go over on the other side? And that was a whole new awareness as to plants have a consciousness that you don't even think about, you know, because most people don't grow their own food. Most people go, they don't know where it comes from. They just go to the supermarket. So do you think that things like that, is that what you're talking about? The impact of understanding nature actually brings you to a better understanding of just who you are and what you are?
Yeah, and it helps you to understand that we are all interconnected, that we're not these separated, autonomous entities, you know, disconnected from everything else. I mean, every breath that you take in, you're taking in the world, and it's going into your body, it's interpenetrating every cell in your body, and that oxygen is actually a gift of the green thing. Now, it's a product of evolution solving incredible problem. You know, the problem that the earliest life, 4.5 billion years ago, started to run out of food because it lived by breaking down big elements and minerals, molecules that were floating around those primal oceans. And it invented this incredible process of photosynthesis that, if you think about it, it's the most amazing miracle, that you can take, like, air and water, break them apart using sunlight as your energy, and turn it into food. And then that process released so much oxygen into the atmosphere, and it was toxic to life at the time. And then life figured out how to use that oxygen and how to use it to burn that food. And the breathers were born, and every breath we take is a product of that incredible gift and that incredible creative process.
Well, you know, when you talk about the creative process, and there's another question I have you, this that I found in the principles, the 13 principles, is, was never beat a dog for coming to you, or use and also use language that speaks to everyone. But before you answer this question, one thought that I had as you were talking, when I'm looking at these principles and I'm thinking of people coming together, maybe the best place we can do is we can meet, we can actually have meetings in gardens while we're surrounded by all of this, while we're meeting and while it's coming. I wonder if that would help matters even a little bit more.
I think that's a wonderful idea. And again, we're lucky in Sonoma County to have beautiful places we can go and parks we can meet in, and opportunities to be out and connect with nature in so many different ways.
I think it really relax. I know Ken and I, we go out in our garden every day and we eat lunch. And the stuff that stuff that goes on in a garden is amazing. And also, one of the things that's happening to us, we have these birds that come back and they seem to be nesting every year. And it's just, you can create an environment not only for yourself but for the creatures that are outside living in your own environment that can have a place when you start setting up a place. Well, let's talk about these two areas here in that you talk about. You say never beat a dog for coming to you. What do you mean by that? And then why do you think using language that speaks to everyone? And I agree with that. You know, one of the things that I keep saying over and over, there's got to be a better language for peace. You know, there's got to be something that maybe we don't have the right words. You know, you try to write a poem. I read this poem before you came on the air about when we take a walk. I have a neighbor by the name of Maria. She doesn't even talk English, and yet we communicate perfectly because we have these different aspects that we can communicate with. So what do you mean by these two things? Never beat a dog for coming to you in language that speaks to everyone.
Well, if you are training a dog and you're training your dog to come, you know, sometimes they do and sometimes they don't. But if they when they do come, you have to reward them. If you beat them or you get angry at them or you tell them they're a bad dog, they're going to be confused. They don't understand the concept, right? You have to reward them. And I think it's the same if we are trying to bring people into a movement for justice. Then when someone joins, we can't say to them, like, where the hell have you been for the last 20 years? What do you mean this is your first demonstration? Like, what have you been doing? Right? We have to welcome them in and reward them and also understand that there's a process of learning and understanding that people need to be taught. Particularly, we have this habit in the movement now, I think because a lot of it has been inspired and a lot of our theory comes from academia, that we use this tremendously abstract intellectual language and we forget that no one can intuitively understand it. You know, if I say to you intersectionality, I know what it means, you probably know what it means. But if it's the first time I've ever heard it, I'm never going to figure out what that means.
Oh, what's interesting about that word, it took me at least 4 interviews before I totally understood it. I mean, that's such a good point. You know, we have a language, and when someone comes in, you know, they're coming from somewhere else. You have to see how you bring it down. What you're saying is the commonality, that we to show we have things in common and that we can converse.
Yeah, and I mean, intersectionality is a very important concept. It's the idea that all of these different forms of oppression interact with each other, and they pile up, and they have, you know, they interact in the way that if you're taking different medications, they may have a different impact than just taking, you know, one thing and then another. And you can use a metaphor like that to explain it and people will understand it. But if you don't bother to do that, then these words that instead of conveying concepts, what they become is markers of who's in and who's out. You know, I know this word, so I'm in. You don't know it, you are out. And that makes people feel excluded and devalued instead of welcomed and valued.
I think what you're saying in the whole idea of all these 13 principles is that in order for us to work together, we have to begin to understand one another. We have to understand each other's languages. We have to understand where we are, and we have to welcome them. You know, I trained with a man when I was – I'm a retired corporate sales manager, and I trained with a man by the name of Tommy Hopkins. And one of the things that he used to say, you take 10 business cards and you put it in your pocket, and what you do is you walk around until you give away those 10 – you don't talk to a friend until you meet 10 strangers. And one of the things that was so interesting to me was when I used to do that, when you start – talking to people, all of a sudden you run into all kinds of different experiences. And so you can't just say, hi, here's my business card. You know, you have to figure a way to come in. You know, you have to figure where they're at, how you can say hello. And it was a very, very interesting exercise for me. And so I think that's what you're talking about, is like kind of figuring out, trying to get to know one another and try to bring each other up in a very welcoming way. And sometimes, like when you come in and say, where were you? Start beating you down like a dog, you know. Then all of a sudden, the person's going to turn away. They're not going to have a good feeling about the experience. Would you go ahead?
And also listening to what people's life experience is, because you don't know, right? You know, you don't know why that person has never been to a demonstration before. You know, maybe they were a caregiver for, you know, their mother with Alzheimer's and never had the opportunity. Maybe they've been working too hard to ever be able to look up and say, you know, how do I have an impact on the world? So listening, you know, and talking to people and being curious, being willing to hear what their life experience is about, that helps to create the kind of connection where then you can share with people some of your values, your way of looking at the world, and have a hope that they may actually listen to you.
Yeah, and ask you a question. You know, one of the things, you know, I went over 13 principles, and mm-hmm. I read them over about 4 or 5 times, and then all of a sudden what popped into my mind, I know that she has some motivation here, and I know that when you look at the principles, there are probably 1 or 2 that she knows is one of the things that kind of breaks groups out and that they need to come together. So what of the 13, what were the maybe 1 or 2 that you really think that is so important that groups understand when they come together?
Well, one of the things I think it's important for us to understand, here it's principle number 11, organizing is educating and educating is organizing. You know, that it's part of our job if we're organizing people to educate them. And education is the process. Again, I spend a lot of my time teaching and educating. And it's not just about hammering people with a certain set of ideas or even a certain set of facts. It's really about understanding how you can communicate and connect with people and arouse their curiosity so they want to learn and they want to hear what you have to say. We also have this, you know, truism we say in the movement that, you know, women shouldn't have to educate men about sexism. Black people shouldn't have to educate white people about racism because it's hard. It's emotional labor, you know, yet more unpaid emotional labor on top of the structures of oppression. But I think maybe at this point we have to say, well, actually, maybe we do. We shouldn't have to. But I've heard young people, for example, say to a group of people like, you know, go educate yourself. There's this thing called the internet, you know, and I want to go, no! What? Don't send people off to the internet unguided and tell them to educate themselves. Like, you know, they'll end up in QAnon. Right? We have a responsibility to understand that is the work of organizing. That is the work of making change. And, of course, there's times when you're too exhausted to do it. There are ways we can be allies for each other when you just don't have the bandwidth to educate somebody. But that is part of what organizing is about. If we don't do that, then we aren't going to be effective, again, at building a movement that's broad enough, powerful enough to actually make these changes.
Well, you know, it's really interesting because I live in a neighborhood that's very, very integrated. And I moved there specifically for that reason, because I wanted to make sure my grandchildren knew that the world was like a flower garden. And what happened for me was I never really had a friendship or a conversation with a black woman. And I end up living across the street. My dear friend Nancy Rogers, we've lived across the street now for 32 years. And we really educated each other. You know, there were some hard questions we had to ask each other. And there were some different things that we got involved in that, you know, all of a sudden that the race thing came up, that we really talked about it. And we found out that we had more in common than not. You know, that as women, we had certain things in common. You know, me being Jewish, her being black, we had those things in that, you know, that kind of the racism and some of the prejudice that comes with that. And I just think that you're absolutely correct. We have to educate each other, not to be afraid to talk to each other. And I think that's part of welcoming. If you can ask a person, you know, what they feel about things or what they think about things or why did you choose this road or whatever, you know, to find some sort of conversation. Well, you know, we are coming to the end of this program very, very quickly. So is there any other principles that you thought, a second one that you thought was really, really important?
Well, I think the perfect is the enemy of the good is an important one. But I guess if I were going to say there's one overarching principle, it's number 13, which is simply be kind.
Yes, yes.
You know, we're living in a world where cruelty has been weaponized and we're surrounded with messages that say it's cool to be cruel. And I think we have to counter that by saying, well, actually, kindness, compassion, caring for others has to be the ground of the kind of world that we want to build. And we do have the capacity to create that world. And we are here for a purpose right now. And maybe that purpose is to be an agent of kindness and caring in a cruel world, and to be an agent of change and transformation to bring that world of justice into being.
Well, you know, it's interesting that you say that, because one question that I have in my mind lately, you know, as far as being kind, because kindness is so important, consideration, you know, it's so important, and it makes people, you know, they've said, you know, people will always remember how you they don't remember what you said, but they remember how you made them feel, and that kindness is an important thing. But the question that I have been asking lately is, we don't have time to discuss this. This could be another conversation. Is what gave us the permission to go ahead and kill each other the way we do, like dropping bombs on each other? It's ridiculous. Well, Starhawk, we're coming to the end of our segment, and I want to give you last words. Any website that you'd like to send people to get to know more about you? Do you have any trainings going on? Are you going to be training on the 13 principles? I certainly would like to know about it. I would love to attend. And anything else that you'd like to share with our listeners that you think are important?
Yes, people can go to my website, which is starhawk.org, or to earthactivisttraining.org, where we have a number of online courses coming up, including one that's a kind of social permaculture clinic. Social permaculture is this whole field of how do we apply some of these principles to our human systems and relationships. So it'll be 4 weeks where you can drop in, you can take any one, or you can take all four, and we'll look at a different topic each week and also give you a chance to ask questions or share something that's going on in your groups and organizations. I also have an in-person training coming up at my ranch out in the Casadero Hills on natural building. That's the last weekend of the month, May 29th to June 1st. And you can find that at earthactivisttraining.org. We're going to look at natural paints and plasters and finishes and sculpting, and mostly just trying to have a good, relaxing 4 days of connecting to nature and learning some good skills. And there's a lot of other stuff that's going to be coming up this summer. I'm going to be teaching a lot up. I'll be up in British Columbia, where we're doing a permaculture design course with a focus on connecting with the indigenous community and with decolonization. And I'll be doing another one later in the summer in France.
Can you do me a favor? Can you email me a list of all those? We're happy to put them on the website with all your information.
I will do that.
I would just love it. And Star House, from the bottom of my heart, thank you so much for this wonderful interview. I mean, I just adore you. I'm just grateful to have you on, really honored to have you on, and thank you for all you do.
Thank you. Oh, and I should say, if you want to read the article on 13 principles, you can find it on starhawk.substack.com.
Okay, we're signing out now. Hi, this is Elaine Holt. You've been listening to Women's Spaces. Thank you so much for listening, and I look forward to being with you the next time.
The previous Women's Spaces show was recorded on Monday, May 19th, 2025.